Hey, it's Michelle Beadle. That's right, the Michelle Beadle. You're welcome. You love talking about sports. I love talking about sports. You know the only thing cooler than talking about sports? Sports! And right now, all your favorite sports are on SiriusXM. I'm talking every NFL game, every game from the NBA, NHL, MLB, every NASCAR race, golf major, major conference college sports, and all the top games in the WNBA. If it gets your heart pumping, it's on SiriusXM. To start your free trial of SiriusXM today, visit SiriusXM.com/believe.
Welcome to the San Jose Hockey Now podcast. This is Shang Peng, editor-in-chief of San Jose Hockey Now. You can also find my work at NBC Sharks and on Twitter at Shang_Peng.
And I'm Keegan McNally. I'm on Twitter at halfwall_hockey. You can find my work at halfwallhockey.com or at San Jose Hockey Now. This week on the podcast, Shang and I will be revealing our preseason top 10 San Jose Sharks prospects. It's going to be a very long episode, a very good episode. Headed into the 2023-2024 season. We spent hours, days watching these prospects and talking to NHL scouts and other league sources about all of these prospects and some few that we're not going to mention today. So without further ado, let's do this kind of like top 10 countdown style. So we'll do Chang's 10, my 10. Of course, you've probably seen my full rankings, or if you haven't, my full rankings are at half-wallhockey.com. Where I go through top 20 as well as some honorable mentions of the Sharks prospects.
So 30 prospects at all written up.
Yep, 30 prospects, 30, maybe 35, with little blurbs about some of them, not full breakdowns. But check it all out there if you want to. You probably haven't heard Shang's list yet, and his is kind of vetted with some more sources. So let's throw it to Shang to start.
Well, you better not have heard my list yet. Yeah, because I've only shared it with a few people. So yeah. We will get to, we're going to do our top 10, but we will get to sort of honorable mentions or guys that we might have missed after our top 10. So I talked with, I think half dozen NHL scouts or league sources about all of these prospects, just to get an idea about, you know, my rankings as opposed to Keegan's. And so just kind of we're gonna get into that right now. And so anyway, number 10, and wish we had a drum roll here, but we gotta work on that, add to the budget.
We'll try next time.
But number 10, I have a Kasper Haltonen. Of course, Haltonen was the Sharks' second round draft pick, 2023, big Finnish winger with a big shot. But I would say that Haltonen, he kind of comes up at number 10, but he's not a necessarily a strong number 10. I had some people telling me that one scout told me, maybe Havlid, Matthias Havlid, the defenseman, instead of Haltonen here. It's close for this scout, but I'm gonna stick with Kasper right here. And so, anyway, I think Keegan and I, we agree on our number 10 here.
Yeah, that's actually we have a few that we agree on this list, mm-hmm. actually. But yeah, Haltonen 10 kind of feels right around that range, and I think you're right when you said that there's probably some wiggle room there between like 10, 11, 12, 13, maybe. They're kind of all in the same grouping. I agree. I like Haltonen as a project in terms of, I think the Sharks picked him not to be ready to play NHL hockey next year.
Sure.
He's kind of like a farther along project. He's got a great shot. Like you said, he plays the game kind of like a pseudo power forward / power sniper kind of game. But just there's a lot of things that I think need to round out with his game in terms of his playmaking and some of his defensive effort stuff that I think is going to take a couple of years to really sort out. And we have news on him too, that he's not news. We've announced this a couple weeks ago, but he's coming to North America to play in the OHL, which is, I think, a good step for his development instead of being over in the Finnish league. Go ahead.
So, I think what Haltonen, he's a guy that, you know, so young that can definitely see that. You know, he has a good year. He can you know, fly up this list, you know. And so you mentioned, we talked about this on this podcast, that Haltonen didn't exactly blow the doors open at the recent World Junior Summer Showcase, but it's just one tournament. And so, you know, we'll see. But there's definitely things to like about his talent level, which obviously a reason why he got picked in the second round and reason why a lot of scouts do like him. Moving on to number nine, my number nine, and this might be controversial, and I did get a lot of pushback on this, but number nine, I have Thomas Bortolo. And Bortolo, as recently as last year at this time, he probably was the Sharks' number two prospect after William Eklund. And so this tells you, one, that the Sharks' prospect pool has deepened quite a bit, and it has. You know, a lot of these guys in my top 10 and Keegan's top 10 are guys that were added in the last year. But also too, though, that Bortolo, even though he was an AHL All-Star last year, there are a lot of questions about his overall game, things with his body language, his defensive effort, his attitude. Those are questions that we didn't really talk about 2 years ago because the Sharks didn't have a lot of prospects a couple of years ago. But I think also, too, you know, that was in the last vestiges of the Doug Wilson / Joe Will era. And maybe Bortolo got kind of in those games right at the end of the season, got a lot of people excited, and there was reason to be excited from his cup of coffee from 2021-22. But I don't know if his game has grown enough since then, though. He hasn't taken that next kind of step. But anyway, a couple things that I've heard from scouts. And again, yeah, I got some pushback on putting Bortolo so low, and I will say that Bortolo, if Bortolo hits or if Bortolo takes a big leap this year, I'm talking about, like, you know, the mental space, the defensive commitment, things that are very controllable. Yeah. If he takes a big step there, then like he's right back up there in like the top five discussion. So the talent is there. But anyway, one scout told me that he definitely have Bortolo ahead of Gushin and Lund. So that tells you kind of who I have ahead of him. And another scout said, yeah, I definitely have Bortolo a couple spots higher than nine here. However, another scout said, actually, because I asked them in general about smallish Sharks forwards, right? And Gushin and Tristan Robbins and Bortolo all share the sort of the size thing, but also they were all drafted in the same draft, the 2020 draft. And he actually had, of the smallest Sharks forward center wingers, he had Gushin and Robbins ahead of Bortolo on his own list. But he reminded, and I just said it, that Bortolo has a higher ceiling than all these players, but also he has a low floor too. And so could, you know, it's really a big year for Thomas this year, I think. And it's, you know, there's a little bit of a hit or miss, boom or bust kind of potential with them. And So I really like, I'll close up with this. I really like Bortolo's talent. I always have. I think I've been pretty strong about that over the last couple of years. But then you hear the other stuff that, you know, not to say that, like, just using Gushin as example, right? Gushin's not a perfect defensive player by any means. Sure. Yeah, no one is saying that. You know, Gushin's never going to win a Selke, you know, if he hits. But there aren't really too many questions, though, that I hear about Gushin's, you know, kind of compete and attitude and that sort of thing, you know. And so so as much as I like Bortolo's talent, and if you ask me on a pure talent level, he has more talent than Gushin, I think. Yeah, you know, there's that kind of the mental stuff. You know, Bortolo is kind, at least last year, I think maybe he got in his own way, I guess that's a way to put it. He got in his own way last year. And if he can get out of his own way, then he's, I think, going to have a productive NHL career. And if he can't, then yeah, that's why he's sort of a falling on my list and other lists. And so anyway, Keegan, who do you got at number nine?
Yeah, and I'll have a lot of stuff to say about Bordello too.
Yes, you have Bordello a little higher, so but
a little bit higher. I even got pushback for where I had him. So you at nine is it's you might get a lot of hate. No, I'm kidding. at nine I've got Matthias Havlid. Which I've watched a lot of Havlid, and I think Sharks have a few prospects that are kind of similar to him. But I think he might be one of the surer defensemen that the Sharks have outside of a few guys that we'll talk about in a minute.
Right.
But he's an interesting player. So he's going to go back to Sweden with Bistad and play on Lin Chopin. He's steadily moving up the lineup there. He got drafted last year in the second round by the Sharks in 2022. Then he was injured to start the year last year in Sweden. So he started off a little slow. Once he got like his feet under him a little bit, he started to do a little bit more on the ice. And obviously the hallmark of his game is he has like a very fantastic point shot. Mm-hmm. He's got a good wrister. He's got a good one timer. And he kind of uses that to produce offense in the SHL. But he's a little bit shorter, and that's always been the knock on him. He's like 5'10", 5'11" or so. And it's hard for those kind of guys that don't have like all world talent to really pop at the NHL level offensively. Sometimes these guys end up just being really, really, really good AHL defenders. Mm-hmm. But I think Havlid just has a very well-rounded game, even though he is a little bit shorter, that I like him in at this like number nine slot. And obviously his improvement too is what I really like about his projection, is that he didn't really fizzle out when he moved up, because he was playing like the J20 level in his draft year and then moved immediately into the SHL, and he looked fine. Like he, you know, held pace as like a 19-year-old defenseman coming off an injury. So I like his projection, and he's played well at all the international games that I've watched him in too. So I like him here, but I could see where he could maybe be in this like middle ground of 9 to 13 or so.
Right. Well, I'd say for myself that like he would have been, if I had a number 11, he would have been it. And I mentioned one scout said that he'd have Havlid instead of Halton in at 10. And I had another scout that told me that he had Havlid definitely in the top 10 and ahead of my number 8. And wow. So people like him. And so I might be a little lower on him on my list than I should be. But like you said, though, I think that when we're talking about the maybe 7 through, I don't know. You know, I wouldn't say 13, but maybe the 7 through 11, 7 yep. through 12, that you can kind of, they're kind of interchangeable. Of this group of prospects. And so I'm also teasing too that our number six, my number six at least, is lower on some lists that I've seen, but other people and myself like him quite a bit. So anyway, we'll get to number six when we get there though. But let's go on to our number eight. And I mentioned that this number eight that a scout that I spoke with would put Havlid over him, but for me, my number eight is Daniil Gushin. And Gushin, again, yeah, that's a little bit of a spicy take, like you had, maybe having him ahead of Bordello. But I like Gushin's compete. I like his overall. Obviously, he's a small guy, but there's never really an overall question about his compete, about his attitude, and all that sort of thing. You know, so I think that mentally, you know, he's in the kind of seems like he's in the right place to kind of maximize his NHL career. And whereas though the scout I talked to that wasn't as fond of Gushin, his quote is, "I'm not confident in Gushin's future at all."
Oh, so, boy.
But that's a fair point. Again, though, you know, this tier of prospect, like again, I think 7 through 12, like if you get a couple of them to pan out, then you're doing well. You're not going to get 7 through 12 on this list, on our list. They're not all of them are going to work out and be good NHL players. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I will say this again, that like I do like Bordello's overall talent package more than Gushin's. If Bordello hits, he should be a better player than Gushin. but I feel a little bit safer maybe with Gushin, I guess. So that's why I have Gushin a little bit higher than Bordalo. So anyway, who you got in number eight?
Spicy take there. I think so. My number eight. I think this is interesting because the Bordalo Gushin discussion, I think, is where we're headed with this. And my number eight is Thomas Bordalo, which you have at number nine and ahead of Gushin, or behind Gushin, I should say. I also have him behind Gushin. I'll reveal that in a minute. But Bordalo is interesting because you're right. I think last year he was probably number two in the Shark system after his, especially after he came over and put up like 5 points in eight games in the NHL last year.
His high level of like when he is on, like at his best, he is definitely NHL caliber skill.
Yeah.
Right. I think we saw that.
My issue with him is just where he places into a lineup with the things that you've mentioned, right? With the defensive effort issues, with the defensive coverage issues. Like, my biggest thing with him has always been his positioning on the ice defensively is just poor. Like, he doesn't really recognize where he needs to be to stop, you know, any kind of transition plays, really. Not any, I shouldn't say any, but like his positioning is just not what I've come to see from a lot of good defensive forwards. And so if he doesn't have good positioning, a lot of coaches will deflect to putting him on the wing. But Bordalo doesn't play well on the wing. That's kind of the biggest thing, is he doesn't have the forechecking effort or like the overall mindset to really grind out pucks on the wall and get him to the center of the ice. He plays better on the center of the ice. Like, he's a good playmaker. He's got great skill. So it's hard for a coach to be like, okay, I'm going to put this guy in as my X center, third line, fourth line center, when he knows that like defensively it's going to be a little bit lax, when those are the lines that are supposed to cover defensively very well.
Right. So he might be a classic case where he's obviously talented offensively, but he's not talented enough that can carry him. Like, exactly. Just that without the other stuff. And that's the other stuff that
his natural position is center. That's where he's stuck. He can't play on the wings and be like your top six winger, because he's just, that's not his position. And you're right, he's not talented enough, I think, to be a top six center as of now. Obviously things change.
Yeah. On just the offensive side. Yeah.
But just on offensively, I don't think he is. So he's kind of this middle ground, where again, he has this higher ceiling but low floor if he doesn't hit or change the way that he kind of plays the game right now. And his season was also very up and down. Like, he started off pretty hot and he shot a lot more than he's used to. Like, he was, you know, putting in goals for the Barracuda left and right, but then he kind of like cooled off after he got named to the AHL All-Star game, which was awesome. His NHL tape was not very good when he came over for the eight games at the end of the year this year. So I don't know. I'm just a little bit lower on Bordalo than I have been in the past. And I think you're right to kind of slot him down, especially with how many prospects the Sharks added in the past year. All right. Who's your, what are we on? Eight? Seven?
Seven.
Seven. Yes. Who's your seven, Shane?
At number seven, I have Cam Lunn. And, Cam, second round pick last year. Had a pretty good overall year, and I think that the Sharks were very happy with him. I think that I've done rankings, recent ones, where he was, you know, kind of at the back end of the top five. I think, though, that, the World Junior Summer Showcase, or just that area, you know, also just that World Juniors training camp, I don't know if he flashed as much as you hope. Also, going back to the development camp and a prospect scrimmage, and of course Keegan talked about Lund's performance there at the World Junior Summer Showcase a couple weeks ago on our podcast. But anyway, though, got some very interesting though information about Lund from a scout, and this is all just reading off of verbatim now. So Lund took a step back at Northeastern this year, in this scout's opinion. Actually, the scout might have him behind Gushin and Bordalo, which is certainly, I think, Keegan, you had him behind. we'll talk about him in a second. This scout, though, didn't blame necessarily put it all on Lund, though. He said that Lund is in a tough spot because the Northeastern head coach calls him a tough dude. he's not bad, but just wants guys to play a certain way. And he cited Colangelo with the Ducks as also struggling to play for this coach. And, you know, this coach, you know, these are all things that you've heard before. And the coach wants two-way, 200-foot commitment, you know, maybe call it low-risk hockey, less freelancing and individualism. And so that makes sense that a guy like Lund, that is sort of the, when you look at him, you know, off the bus, he's one of those guys off that bus that looks like maybe like a Haltonen too, that they should be dominating out there. And, you know, they've got the size, you know, Lund can skate, Lund can shoot, you know? And so when you see him not make quite the impact that you expect, be it at development camp or at the World Junior Summer Showcase, then you wonder, you know, well, you know, what's going on a little bit, you know? And so anyway, though, when we talk about Lund and Northeastern, though, like, I think, though, that if things work out, you know, if basically, you know, the trick with a guy like Lund is that he learns to play sort of the right way. I mean, it's the same thing with Bordalo. Learns to play the right way, but he doesn't lose his skills. His skills are still apparent. So if you blend that, then that becomes a legitimate NHL player, a legitimate, you know, playoff caliber, middle six, top six player. And so Lund is, of course, younger than Bordalo, so we give him a little more runway. He's also a little bit bigger, and so that will help him too, just negotiate, you know, pro hockey and stuff. And so anyway, Lund is sort of at a place where, yeah, maybe a little bit of a step back, like this scout says, but there is a lot of talent there. And if Lund can kind of, you know, if you can sort of, well, you know, I don't know, break is the right word, but kind of like break Lund's game a little bit, but then build him back up into a more complete player, then you have a, you know, a prospect that's going to be, we'll be talking about him in the top five. And so we'll see, you know, so again, another big year for this prospect. But right now, though, yeah, I have him at number seven.
Yeah, I'll talk a little bit about Lund. Lund, I think, was 11 on my list. So just outside of this top 10. And you mentioned Haltonen. Him and Haltonen are, like, not comparable. I mean, comparable in some ways, but similar kind of thing, right? They're project players, great size, great shot, and then you kind of try and build out the rest. Lund's a better skater. Lund's better in transition than Haltonen, I think. But Haltonen does have a better shot than Lund, even though Lund's shot is pretty good. But, yeah, that quote about his tough time at Northeastern, when I watched him there, it was just kind of up and down. And that whole, like low risk hockey thing, it sounds like it's just a coach having some hockey speak or whatever, but I think that's true for Lund. I don't think he's got a very good, like, B game. And if you've heard of, like, A games and B games, some scouts use that to try and like, what's their A game, what's the thing that they make their money on? Is it their playmaking, their shooting, whatever? And then their B game is all the stuff they do when they can't do that thing. Do they do anything, or do they suck at doing something, or are they good at doing something? Lund just doesn't really do a whole lot after his A game. If he's not in the offensive zone, it's, you know, and he does have good transition, but he doesn't really understand the cycle defensively to get the puck to then transition very well. But if you know, that just takes time too. A lot of times the prospects that come from USA Juniors aren't as well rounded in the beginning. And then when they get through college, like 2, 3, 4 years, they really come out as well-rounded hockey players. So I think you're right. A couple more years, if he does round out his game really well, he has all of the other tools to really be, like, in this top, like, 5, 6, 7 area for the Sharks. That's what I'll say on Lund. My number seven, it's not Lund. My number seven is, I'm probably going to say, probably just my favorite Sharks prospect, just because it's Daniil Gushchin. So I have Bordalo 8, Gushchin at 7. And it kind of goes back to that topic about what is Bordalo as a position player and what is Gushchin. Bordalo is a playmaking center at his core, but it's hard for him to slide into a lineup in that, like I said. Gushchin is a scoring winger that loves the power play. It's not hard. It's like, it's hard to get there into the NHL, but it's a lot easier to get into that position in the NHL than is a playmaking center in the NHL. Sure. So coaches are a little bit more, that's his first thing that I have over Bordalo, is they're a little bit more likely to play Gushchin above Bordalo, just based on their position. Second is that Gushchin has a little bit more effort well, actually a lot more effort than Bordeleau does in the defensive zone. He's not as physically developed as Bordeleau. Like, Bordeleau is a better physical player.
Yeah, stronger.
Stronger, like, on the boards, all that. Guschen isn't strong on the boards yet. He's still very tiny, and that's, like, going to be his thing forever. He's very tiny. They're similar, like, height. I think Bordeleau is probably an inch or two taller. But, yeah, it's just Guschen. It just has that effort level. He has the positioning and has the game that I think he's above Bordeleau in my mind. He's also just got a fantastic shot. And when he's playing on, like, his game, you can really tell that's like he's got like a little bit of a twinkle in his eye and a little bit something special that is hard to find, like, on the Sharks prospect list, aside from your very, very top of the lineup guys here. So I don't know. I love Guschen. I've watched him for years now, and he grows his game. Like, although it's still like highlighted by a fantastic shot and skill and transition and good skating, it just grows. Like, he gets a little bit more defensively aware. He's getting a little bit stronger on the puck. He's doing a little bit more back checking than he used to do. And I like it. So I'm really hoping that he finds a spot in this, probably on the Barracuda, that gives him all the power play minutes, and he really puts up like a point a game season in the AHL. I think that's what he needs to prove that he can move up.
Sure.
But I love Guschen. That's my answer. So that's our number seven. All right. So we've finished our 7 through 10. So I think now it's time to move on to number six. Shang, who do you have for your number six?
I have Henry Thrun at number six, and one scout, gave Thrun a little more credit because Thrun has shown, has already played NHL games and has shown a degree of competency in pro hockey. But he said that, sort of, if we're going to tier this out, that Thrun is kind of in his own tier as opposed to, so he's ahead of. For, I think, a few people that I've talked to, and no one really pushed back on Thrun being this high, but that, he is ahead of the group that we've just talked about, the Bordeleau and the Guschens and the Havlids and that type. And so, yeah, I know that there's some projections that maybe he's more bottom pairing. I like his game a lot. I can see him still fitting him, middle pairing. I don't know if he's going to be a top pairing defenseman, but I can see middle pairing for him. And he's just very, very solid. I think you're very, very sure about him and his NHL chances, and that he's going to be a contributor in the coming years. Just question of how good can he be.
Yeah, it reminded me of when Ferraro kind of stepped in. They're not really similar defensemen, but that whole like jump out of college and then like hold your own kind of thing in the NHL is hard to do. And he looked great. I mean, it's only 8 games, right? Anybody, if you're on your game, sometimes you can look like an NHL player for eight games. And Thrun was coming off like, pretty heavy reps in the NCAA. He was the captain of Harvard. So he was stepping right into like already a competitive environment from a competitive environment. So it's hard to say exactly if that's going to be his entire future, is that he's that steady, but it definitely was good to show it right away. There was no like, I'm worried, I'm scared, I'm nervous. It was, just cool as a cucumber kind of thing.
Right.
I like a lot of his like transition passing, I think, is really good. Mm-hmm. There's some questions I think you had as well about his overall foot speed. I think
everybody's question is his feet. If his feet were better, then he'd be top three prospect here or whatnot. His feet are probably going to be the limiting factor. It's not his compete. It's not his hockey brain. He has skills with the puck too. Like you mentioned, his first pass, so far he's shown that's a very reliable first pass, and he can make a couple of those highlight reel ones too, some nice ones too. And so all that seems pretty sound and reliable, but the feet, we're not so sure about.
And little spoiler alert, Henry Thrun is also number six on my list as well. I think that's interesting, like in his own tier, because it feels like the prospects that are below him on that list, which we have a lot of the similar ones, could be like middle of the lineup guys if everything kind of works out.
Right.
But then Thrun is kind of like, feels like he could be in the NHL and maybe into this middle pairing, step into higher roles if necessary.
I think there's a certainty too, right? Yeah, safer. Yeah. Then like a Havlat. Havlat could conceivably be a top four guy too, but you know, it's harder to see that right now, obviously, because Havlat's, you know, at least a year away from coming over here.
Yeah. And there just feels like a little bit more certainty with Run. I mean, I think his skating needs to improve a little bit. I like his positioning defensively a lot. But his skating is not amazing. But he does match speed pretty well. I mean,
yeah,
it's not terrible. It's just needs a little bit of work, I think. And it's interesting. I don't know what your opinion is about on. Well, I guess we talked about a couple weeks ago about him making the Sharks out of camp because we added so many defenders.
That's actually about what I was gonna talk about to wrap up my thoughts on Henry. That the Sharks definitely do have a logjam of defensemen that are not waiver exempt. Of course, there's a question of if you put the entire, let's be honest, you put the entire Sharks defense on waivers, how many of those guys would get picked up? Not all of them. I can tell you that. So let's, you know, let's be honest about that. But but though they do have a lot of guys, and there are guys that they may not want to risk for sure. Not that none of them will be picked up. There are guys that would definitely get picked up, and so they don't want to risk them. And so there could be a little bit of a numbers game where my initial projection had Thrun making the team and them waving a guy like maybe Radim Šimek or something like that, right? But I actually I did talk to somebody recently. Actually, something that I'm gonna post later today. But by the time this podcast is out, that you guys will see in the article that I talked with one NHL scout, and he was like, yeah. Gavanka, he's gonna make it ahead of Thrun, and part of it is, you know, Gavanka's role as kind of offensive guy, right? The Sharks have nobody like that, and also too, Thrun is the main thing is that he's waiver exempt. I don't think it's a critique on Thrun's ability at all. It's just that it's a bit of a numbers game. You know, the Sharks have, I think, nine defensemen or so that would need to pass through waivers, Gavanka included, and Ohotiuk also. Yeah, that's another guy that people don't forget is not waiver exempt this year. So so in that scenario, then yeah, maybe Thrun because of this numbers game, goes back down, and you expect him to come back up. You expect him to excel, but you never know, though. You know, guys get sent down. You know, mental stuff happens, and you know they're not. You know, they kind of lose a step down there. But we'll see.
Yeah, it's tough to project. I guess unless something happens before training camp, where they move out a few of these guys. But you've got like McDonald, Šimek, Ohotiuk and Gavanka, all not waivers exempt, right?
So right, like, and besides the standby guys too, that you know, Burrows, Rutta, Vlasic, Ferraro, Benning, exactly. Right?
So, guys that you expect are not going to get waived to be sent down.
And Knyazhov is not waivers exempt either this year too. So yeah, so that's a lot of
dudes. Yeah, it seems to be like a top 6-7, and then there's four other dudes. So it's it's kind of tough. I want Thrun to make it, and I feel like based on his season he should make it.
Training camp though, yeah. So
yeah. I mean, there's the training camp, and also the Garakuda would have like a world's better defense if they started the year with Thrun, Mukhamadulin, rather than like Merkley and Knyazhov.
Sure.
So, yeah, but so that'd be interesting at least. You know, it might be another one of those things like last year where everybody thought Bortolo would make it, but they just ran out of bodies and then he got sent down. Mm-hmm. Same kind of thing with Thrun. It might happen again.
Right.
But we'll see.
I can also very well see Thrun excelling so much at training camp over his competition that they have to, you know, keep him up.
Okay. So that's Henry Thrun, both of our number sixes. Who is your number five? We're getting the top five, which
is
really good, actually, I will say, overall that we're going to get into. I think that it's a well-improved top five from last
year. It is. Number five, I have Quentin Musty. Obviously, Quentin made a name for himself at Dev Camp in the prospect scrimmage, scored a couple of goals there. But like we've talked about in the podcast, I think his game is still a little bit one note. And I think that he's closer in terms of his tier, right? And I'm going to get to it when we talk about our top four. But I don't think Musty is quite in that in that top four, top three of Sharks prospects in terms of, okay, this is what we're building around. You know, Musty, they just drafted him, and still very much unknown. And so obviously you see some of the ceiling, so it won't really take a lot, you know, just, it's not far for him to like break into this top three or four Sharks prospects. But right now though, top five is a convenient number for me in my mind. If I were to kind of tier it out, I see, a top four for the Sharks prospects, clear top four. I think Musty and Thrun are kind of together. Musty's ahead of Thrun just because of Musty's ceiling. And then 7 through 12-ish, I think, kind of all are interchangeable. So that's kind of how I see it.
Yeah, absolutely. And Musty was, like, regarded as, like, a steal of the draft, which is always fun. Right after the draft, like, you got to, a steal at 26 overall, which is an interesting thing for the Sharks, because a lot of times it's felt like, who did we pick at 26 overall? Why are we doing this?
That's what people said about Bisted, and that's what people said about Weisblatt. And so, one out of two isn't bad. So,
one of them turned out pretty well, which we'll talk about.
Or appears to be. Appears to be
for so far. But Musty felt like a steal in where he fell to, just because it does feel like he does have a high ceiling. He's got great puck skills. He's a great playmaker. He is a big winger as well when he actually uses his size. I think one note is a decent way to describe him, or just kind of a little inconsistent is the way that I would say. He's not always on that tear that sometimes he gets onto, where you recognize that he's like the best player on the ice, and sometimes he just kind of fades away, which is a lot of young prospects. And
lot of the guys that we have 7 to 12, right?
So and you love to see the flashes that he has that are amazing. So he's going to go back to the OHL for next year and probably kill it. Like, I imagine he's just going to tear up the league. He had a pretty good year last year. He had 78 points in 53 games, which is good. I don't want to project it, but I think he's going to go over 100 points, would be my guess. Okay. So we'll see. Things change, things happen, but it wouldn't surprise me if that's the kind of year he has when he goes back to the OHL.
So you expect him to break into sort of the top 3-4 conversation by the end of the year then?
Maybe.
That's what you're okay.
I think
hey, take a possible. Stand, all right?
It take also a stand depends on
and yeah,
I honestly think it, right? That the top 4 is, like you said, the tiers. And also, this is spoiling who my 5 is. My 5 is also Quentin Musty. It's getting a little bit like back to back here, but my 5 is also Quentin Musty, but the top 4, I think, is on its own tier, and Quentin and Henry Thrun kind of provide a really good 5-6 that could jump up depending on how well they do next year.
Right.
I wouldn't say that even if he puts up 100 points that he would be in my top 4.
Okay.
It depends on what the next guys do.
Sure.
It's just a more of a progression thing for Musty, but I like him overall. I watched him at the World Junior Summer Showcase. He had some good games and some decent but not doing a whole lot games. He did look out of place, which is good because he's playing with mostly all of like the classes that are 1 or 2 years above him in that small tournament, so he didn't look out of place for sure. And then obviously we he was heralded as like gonna make the Sharks after the prospect scrimmage, where he looked like he was flying out there. You're shaking your head no, so probably not.
I mean, again, one note is it's hard to make it in the league as an 18-year-old if you're just good at one thing, kind of, which is, I guess, with him, it's just sort of this kind of straight on, like skating, speed, kind of like, but that kind of like hard charging game, like, a 30-year-old veteran defenseman, not the greatest defenseman in the world, but a Joel Edmondson is not gonna.
Yeah, it's gonna knock him down.
Yeah. So a guy like that, and so, So I he definitely needs to add a little more or get stronger and faster. You can get strong enough and fast enough where you can kind of rely on your like one go-to thing, your A game, like we talked about. He's 18. Yeah, he's not. He's not fast enough or strong enough. So.
He did have an illness during his draft year too that kind of set him back from like being as consistent as he can be. So be interesting to see him get a full season for next year. Okay, number four. Now we're getting into the big four, which we've said is its own tier. Shang, do you have a number four?
Have Philip Biested. And Biested, you know, we've obviously seen his progression from a pick last year where people are like, this guy, you know, this guy's like a second rounder. You guys trade, not only did you guys trade back from number 11, but this is the first guy that you pick in the Mike Greer, Greer era. And it looks like it was a great pick by Greer and Doug Wilson Jr., at least so far. I think Biested has impressed in every tournament. Any kind of showcase that he's been a part of since the draft, obviously World Junior Championships, and most recently the World Junior Summer Showcase. And so, anyway, the way that one scout put it to me is that he saw the Sharks' top three, top four prospects as sort of the core, the future of the Sharks, and that you're hoping that these guys hit, and then the rest of the guys. If you get one to three out of them, that's not bad. You know, hopefully you're hoping for three, obviously, you know, sure. So Biested, I think, right now he does track and we'll see, you know, he's going to have a larger role, more will be expected of him. You know, last year he was the SHL Rookie of the Year. Maybe he surprised people a little bit last year. He's not going to surprise anybody this year. And so, can he take another step? You know, we'll see. But so far it's looking so good for him to be a very, very solid middle six center in the NHL.
Yep. And my number four is also Philip Biested, but I will say it was really, really close between three and four for me. I went back and forth between who's three and who's four.
I think this is fair. Yeah. Yeah.
Ultimately I landed on Biested just because of like very top of the ceiling kind of thing.
Sure.
I think Biested.
Me too. Yeah.
Yeah. I think like you said, Biested has a profile of a good middle six center, I think, in the NHL. I think that's ultimately what you're looking for, is like a second or third line center out of him. He's a lot faster this year. I watched Biested, like I went back and reviewed a lot of his tape after they drafted him, and I wasn't in love with his acceleration. That was like, it felt like he was getting caught from behind a lot, especially when he would turn out from behind the net. He'd get caught like all the time. And he's kind of really improved it this year. Like his feet are a lot better from what I can tell.
Okay.
Again, this is all video work and stuff like that. But I feel like his speed has improved, especially because he's such a big guy that he's like 6'3" or 6'4", whatever he is. He looked a little lanky on the ice and he's starting to get a little bit more muscle, it feels like. And I think that's helping his speed just a touch. And what's always been there about him is that he's just very, very aware of the play. And I've talked about that for Biested a lot, is that he has a good awareness for loose pucks. He's got a really good awareness of his positioning on the ice. So we talked about like Bortolo. I feel like his positioning isn't always there. Biested does feel like he's in a very good position to get pucks back and then go the other way with them all the time, which is what stood out to me when I watched him. And then this year he like stepped into the SHL, was their third line center right off the bat, and then just never left. He got in some power play time as well. And he just kept improving. And that's honestly why he became like the SHL Rookie of the Year. He just looked like every month he was getting better, getting more comfortable, starting to beat defenders one-on-one. Like his rush patterns would improve monthly. Like before it was like he'd kind of defer and wait around. And now he's just trying to like get around a man in the neutral zone and take off. So I really like Biested's progression. I watched him now, I don't know how many times. And then the World Junior Summer Showcase. He's looking like an important, probably top six center for Team Sweden at the World Juniors for December.
Right, and he already was the last World Juniors. He was a top six center. So
exactly. So he's looking like going to be a super important role for them. And I think, you know, it's kind of like it was a big headline when he went back, got loaned back to Sweden because it's like before training camp. And I wonder, this is not insider information. It's just something that I'm wondering, is that how much of this is based off of what happened with Eklund, where they kept him the whole training camp, kept him nine games, and then sent him back. And it felt like he never got his footing in the SHL when they'd already started in September, essentially, with their season. I wonder how much of this decision to send Biested back now had to be related to that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I can speak to that exact point, but I would say though with Eklund though that even though Eklund clearly physically was not NHL ready as an 18-year-old, his brain though was, you know, he was surviving out there as an 18-year-old because he just was that hockey smart. Oh, you know, I don't know if Bisset is quite that sort of high end, you know, maybe elite kind of sort of processing of the game. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I think the Sharks would keep him if Bisset could legitimately compete for a top nine role on the Sharks. Yeah. I think they would. But I think that at this point, though, that's sort of still a reach for him. He still needs to progress, but it's good to hear, like you said, that there's obvious progression that you're seeing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's pretty obvious, and I don't think anyone actually expected him, because he played in the U8 or the World Junior Championship right before he was drafted by the Sharks, and this was the World Under 18s. Mm-hmm. He put 3 points up in 6 games, which was not amazing. Like Havlat, I think, had like 10 points in 6 games that tournament as a defenseman. And Sweden was an absolute like great team. They had like Hermann.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And this was their U18. So if Bisset played like second or third line center on that team, mm-hmm. and then within 6-8 months, he's getting 10 points in 7 games in the World Junior Championship.
Right. Well, the next World Juniors, I mean, I think I asked people after that World Juniors that mm-hmm. of that Swedish group that got drafted ahead of him or around him, like Hermaki, Oslin, Ogren, right, and Bisted, that people I talked to were like, yeah, we were wrong on Bisted. Like Bisted would go ahead of those guys in a redraft, all of those guys. And so that speaks to just sort of his progression, and it's continued since that World Juniors.
Yeah, they took this kind of this approach of a project pick at the 28th. Like they knew that he wasn't, you know, ready, but he had a good frame. He had a great like defensive center mind, and they were like, there's some puck skills there too. Maybe he develops into it. And then he just kind of rocketed off the past year, which is awesome to see.
You love to see it.
Yeah. It, you know, the other guys like Lekkerimaki had a little resurgence towards the end of the year. He had a down year in the Allsvenskan, and then his playoffs, he's done a lot better. Same with Oslin. He actually had a good year the whole year. But I think if you asked any scout now, who would you rather take? I think most would still take Bisted, or most would now take Bisted.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's awesome. It was a great pick by the Sharks. I wanted Yuri Kulik at the time, but that was just like my own bias, I think, in the draft, and both did well.
Well, Kulik would have been a great pick too. So
yeah, both were right there. And there was a lot of people also clamoring for Brad Lambert, which, well, I like Lambert, but I think I'd still have rather at Bisted right now. He seems like he could be an important, you know, role player for the Sharks. And mm-hmm. role sounds bad, but like, you know, second.
No, I mean, you win with you can win with guys like him in theory. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this isn't a amazing comparable, because I think, you know, Sean Couturier is like an all-star hockey player, but mm-hmm. I feel that similar kind of center is who I see him as, but like obviously not first line caliber like Couturier is. So anyway,
a poor man Sean Couturier. So.
Yeah, exactly. Poor man Sean Couturier, but you know, we'll see. You know, it takes a lot for him to make out, but I still think he's going to need a few more years, especially adjusting to North American ice too.
Sure.
So, because he's only played in Swedish ice pretty much. All right, so that's top four, top three. Now we're getting down to it.
Mm-hmm.
Shang, who's your top three?
Number three, I have Shakir Mukhamudulin. Mm-hmm. And a couple of interesting things I heard about Mukhamudulin. Some people find him still, and I think, you know, the reason why I have him above Bisted, and you alluded to it, is that, you know, if everything comes together with Mukhamudulin, that he should be a more valuable player than a Bisted, even if everything comes together, you know, all things being equal. If everything comes together for both those guys, Mukhamudulin is probably a more valuable player. But though, Bisted's floor is probably safer. You know, Mukhamudulin, we could see at times too, you know, like he is, he's this big guy who can skate, but it can be awkward sometimes too. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's not always the smoothest looking. So I had a scout say to me, I would probably have Mukhamudulin a couple of spots lower on your list. So, you know, But then I had another scout say to me, actually, I like Mukwundula more than Eklund.
Yeah.
So I think the reason for this range is because Mukwundula at this point is still not the smoothest looking player at all times. But again, though, you see the different tools, and they obviously are coming together. You know, had a very good season in the KHL. I think he was good for the Barracuda when he came over, the 12 games or so that he played there. And so that combination of length, of skating, of size, height, and surprisingly good puck play, all that combines to, if he's able to put everything together, we have a guy that top four easily if it comes together, and maybe might kind of flirt with like a number two defensive, maybe. I know I'm being a little maybe a bit optimistic there on that, but I just thought it was interesting though, just that range of outcomes, that scouts were kind of, or not outcomes, but sort of rankings where Mukwundula did range.
Yeah, he's kind of a divisive prospect, I guess. He's sure, also my number three. He's my number three as well, so now we've got a match for 6, 5, 4, and 3, which, I think it feels like the right tier list for the Sharks in terms of how we've got them.
Right.
But Mukwundula and Bystedt were really hard to rank for me, just because I think there is a lot of risk factor with Mukwundula that I don't think there is as much risk with Bystedt. I feel like in some capacity, Bystedt is probably going to make the NHL. I just feel like it based off of what I've seen. Mukwundula, there's times when I'm like, yes, this guy is going to be a top four defender for the Sharks. He's, he's got great length. He can cover a lot of ice fairly quickly for somebody his size. He's got a great point shot. He competes really hard. He can be physical. But then there's other times you're like, I don't think I've ever seen an NHL player try to make that turn like that. Like, I don't think I've ever seen, sometimes he can be just a little bit awkward on his skates. And then sometimes he just loses his defensive coverage and can just kind of forget where his man is going. But, I think there's still just a lot tiring out with him. And he's been that way ever since he was drafted. The Mukwundula draft pick was, for people who follow like the internet drafts, the internet scouts, those kind of guys, which I guess I am one. it was like universally panned that
he
was. The guys from like EP and stuff like that were just like, I cannot believe he got drafted here. He's like a third rounder at best. Like, there's so much wrong with his, XYZ, his game. He's so raw. It's been that way ever since he got drafted. It just felt like the last year, and it's good on Greer and company to identify it, he kind of took off. He put up 25 points in 67 games in the KHL, was playing on their top two lines or so, looked really good most nights. And it's not telling, but it feels like they did the Timo Meier trade, not just for the draft picks, but also because Mukwundula was in the deal.
Oh, sure.
And they knew that that's the type of player they were missing in their defensive pipeline.
Yeah, I mean, I think they knew, and I don't know this. Actually, I think I do know this. They weren't getting Hughes, Nemich, Mercer, those guys. Those guys weren't on the table. There wasn't enough competition for Meier to force New Jersey to ante up to that level. But on the next tier of prospects for the Devils, Mukwundula was top of the list for the Sharks.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people were expecting to get Alex Holtz because Alex Holtz has connection to William Eklund.
Yeah.
But they were like, nope.
Holtz's game hasn't grown like Mukwundula. You mentioned that last year and that growth that Mukwundula had. If Mukwundula has one more of those years, then he's gonna be in NHL for the next decade or so. So you can see that. Whereas Holtz, Holtz obviously was the seventh pick of his draft, but that game, his game has not progressed in any sort of way like that. And I know that a lot of people saw Holtz and Mukwundula in the same day. I don't think they were. I think Mukwundula is ahead on most people's sort of rank, like at least people in the league, amateur scouts and whatnot. So a lot of people have a lot more questions about Holtz than Mukwundula.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. I think just Mukwundula and the way that he plays can match into a role that it's hard for Alex Holtz to slot into based on how their games have evolved. Mugamulu has just been much more of a slow burn, I think, because Holtz kind of rocketed off as like had really great, you know, draft year and everything. But yeah, I really like the chances for Mukhamudulin to really break into the Sharks over the next few years. I do think he needs more time. I think he'll be on the Barracuda for next year as like getting their probably top power play minutes, just kind of anchoring that team and really more, you know, helping his adjustment. He did great when he came over, 10 points in 12 games. He looked pretty solid other than some kind of like defensive lapses and stuff like that. I thought he looked really solid almost every game that I watched. So really excited for him. And it was hard, like I said, between 3 and 4 for me, between Mugamulin and Bistad.
To your point, though, the defense stuff, it's easier to learn. What was surprising about Mukhamudulin was that he looked more comfortable with the puck than without it, and that stuff is harder to teach. And so if you can improve, you know, the skating a little bit, the defense a little bit, then you've really got something.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, is that the defenders that look like him typically don't have like the hands like he does, or, you know, the actual puck skills or the acceleration and the straightforward speed that he does. So it's hard to miss basically when he's got the puck on his stick, which is great. All right. That's number 3. I think 2 and 1 people are going to be unsurprised by, but
and
go ahead.
Let's do our 2 and 1 together just for a little bit more suspense. So, and anyway, what I have to say about both of them, you know, that's kind of related anyway. So, So my number 1 is Will Smith. That of course makes number 2 William Eklund. So who is your number 1?
Yeah, number 1 is Will Smith, and number 2 is William Eklund. Okay. So we have matched our top 6. Which, you know, I think it's right, but anyways, yeah, let's go with 2.
That's okay. That's okay, but anyway though, so I did mention contrary opinion about Eklund, that someone had Mukhamudulin ahead of Eklund. Not that this scout doesn't like Eklund, but I think this scout was just kind of seeing stars with Mukhamudulin, that if it all comes together for Mukhamudulin, then like that could be more valuable than a, you know, who some project now in Eklund as a second line-ish winger. And you know, different scouts have different opinions. So again, you know, when we talk about you know, sometimes, you know, there's a consensus. And so you ask 5 scouts, 10 scouts, something, and they'll all answer the same way. And so you kind of get a sense of that, right? Like, for example, last year, if you asked 10 amateur scouts, who's the number 1 pick of the draft, probably 10 out of 10 will say Connor Bedard. You know, maybe if you ask like 50 or 100, then maybe someone will say someone besides Connor Bedard. But if you ask, I think, scouts, like, who is the best Sharks prospect? Most will say Smith, but someone told me Eklund. And I think actually, if you ask enough, maybe you might even get Mukhamudulin up there too, because again, just sort of the ceiling of a Mukhamudulin. But anyway, though, so Eklund over Smith. And so I asked this scout, does that mean you don't like Smith? That was my first stop. He said, no. He said that Smith is a future top liner for your franchise. That's his belief. But he believes that Eklund can still be a franchise player. And so that is now, you know, when Eklund debuted and also when the Sharks drafted him in 2021, that was sort of the groupthink, right? That because he fell, you know, he wasn't supposed to be there for the Sharks at number 7. And then he was able to make his NHL debut. And even though he was kind of physically overmatched, you can see how smart and how brilliant he could be in those 9 NHL games he played in the first season. And so there was an assumption that, oh, this guy is going to be indeed a franchise elite first line player. And obviously, Eklund went back to the SHL. He really struggled going back to the SHL. Last year, the Barracuda, he was good, but I wouldn't say that necessarily that he didn't blow doors off offensively. And so I think that the groupthink now, and I'm with it, I'll admit, is sort of tamping down expectations for Eklund into more of a second-line winger, a really good second-line winger. I don't worry about the size. I think he's such a smart player. And as David Quinn called him, an honest player, too. So he's going to give you a good defensive effort, too. So he's going to give you a good, smart 200-foot effort along with a lot of brilliance on the offensive end. And so so I feel I like Eklund a lot, but – yeah, do I see him now as a franchise guy? Or maybe not, and that's where people, I think, saw him, right, after the Sharks drafted him 7th, 2021. So, you know, he definitely was – he was kind of like the what Will Smith is now, kind of the you know, the new hot prospect, right? You know, and so now, you know, William Eklund, we're sort of post-hype. And post-hype, there aren't a lot of guys that think of Eklund as, I think, a franchise player. But, well, here's a scout that sees that. This is not taken away from Smith. And so if the scout is right, then, you know, the Sharks will, you know, of course, be thrilled by this, you know, having two franchise forwards, right? Drafted within 3 years of each other. So, but, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, it's tough. I think that Eklund most nights on the Barracuda was their best forward outside of maybe Andrew Agazino, but yeah. he's like in his own tier because he's just, you know, he's a 30-year-old. AHL,
right.
NHL tween,
right? Yeah, AHL MVP All-Star type. Yeah,
yeah. So he's perfected the game that he plays. So sometimes it was Agostino who's the best player, but a lot of times it was Eklund. And you know, the Eklund hype train got off the rails a little bit, I think, when he got drafted, and then it got you know, his up and down Swedish year afterwards was just a little. It was hard to take at times because it didn't feel like Eklund was playing the game that Eklund likes to play. And watching it didn't feel correct either. It just didn't match. And he also just didn't play well as a center. And I think we kind of eventually realized that he's not a center. And they realized it too. His year this year, I loved it. I think he had the exact rebound year that he needed. I thought like he looked good in the NHL too. I thought he wasn't out of place at all. Mm-hmm. You know,
he looked better than he did the first time around because, 100%. You know, he obviously added strength and muscle, you know, we've talked about that, but he used it too. He was not a perimeter player. He got, you know, deep into the middle of it. And I think in the future, that's what he'll need, you know, because he's not Joe Thornton. He's not good enough that he can just stay on the perimeter and make passes, you know,
he's also not big enough that nobody can take the puck off him.
Exactly. You know, he's a great skater in tight, you know, great edges. And so that helps him along the wall. But yeah, he's not necessarily going to just make a living off that. But what we talked about, you know, guys in their A game and what else they have besides that. Eklund has a lot of game beyond his sort of, you know, if you want to count what we saw the first time he was in NHL was sort of his A game, that playmaker type, right? You know, making those flashy, you know, spinorama moves, like that's sort of his A game, right? Yeah. Okay, that's great, right? But he's not, you know, not a lot of players are going to survive in NHL, thrive in NHL with just that. But he's added to that. He's clearly added to that.
Strength. He's added defensive responsibility. He's he's a great competitor. Like
I think he's going to be a good player. Yeah, he's going to be a good player. But you know, now we're talking about sort of the is he going to be a franchise guy? Is he going to be a first line guy? And so that's sort of
is he going to be your like? And they're different players entirely. But is he going to be like your Timo Meier? You know, absolute first line winger, or is he going to be more like a Gus Nyquist? You know, kind of second line, good point producer, but. Not that kind of absolutely first liner, you know?
Right.
And I think that's kind of where I land as well, because he's number two on mine, like I said. Mm-hmm. I think after, you know, putting together the D plus 1 year's draft plus one and this year's draft plus two, put them together, I think second line is where I see his projection at. But I think he's got a good realistic shot to get there with some careful development. I think he makes the team out of camp too, just because I think the – you know, they added some skilled wingers, but I think he has got such a well-rounded game that a lot of guys might be missing that they added that I think he's going to find his way on the Sharks, not just because he's a very skilled player, but because he's well-rounded.
Yeah, he has that B game. And so, he and Thrun. They're not exactly the same type of prospect, but I think even though there's the numbers game is sort of suggesting that they may not break camp with the Sharks, but of course though injuries can happen, so you know that players, you know, rosters don't stay entirely healthy of course throughout all training camp, so that should help those guys. But also too, I just think that they're going to play a mature and smart enough game. They'll kind of force the Sharks' hand, like, hey, we have to keep these two. They're too good, compared to the rest of our roster to, you know, send them down to the, you know, you're not helping them at a certain point, you're not helping them anymore if you send them to Barracuda because they don't need it, you know. And yeah. I don't think Eklund needs it. Thrun maybe could use a little time out there and be like the man out there, and that could be good for him. But you know, Eklund did it, like you said, last year. Most nights he was one of the Barracuda's two best players. Even if the offense numbers don't blow you away, the overall maturity in his game and both sides of the ice was there. And so yeah, that's something definitely that he can hang his hat on.
And I think we talked about this with a lot of guys, is the progression curve, right? You want them to focus on something that they're not great at and make it better. And Eklund doesn't have a great shot, and he's not very strong. Mm-hmm. And then he went out and got stronger. Got a better and worked on his shot. Like, I'm not saying he's got a great shot or anything, because he's still fine, I think.
Yeah.
But it's better than it was.
Yeah,
but
a lot of times, right, like if you have a strong A game, you don't need to add more A game to because if you add more A game, then you're a superstar, you know. But you add some B game, you become like average or competent at things that you were bad at before. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you've transferred yourself as a player. So no one's asking, again, you know, going back to Bortle, because he's such a kind of a divisive prospect at this point. Like, no one is asking him to win a Selkie. No one is expecting that of him. No one is asking him to even be William Eklund. You know, like, Bortle may never have that label of being an honest player, but he's got to be competent at least at the defensive end. He can't be a liability. He's not good enough. You know, like, Erik Karlsson is good enough offensively that Erik Karlsson can't afford to be a liability sometimes, because defensively, because he's so good offensively that you take, you know, the overall impact is still like way in the positive, right? With a Karlsson. It is not with a Bortolo, at least at the NHL level. And so, but if you add those, you know, the B part of your game, if you add to that, that you're not at least hurting your team. If you're not scoring, but you're not hurting your team, then okay, then the team can carry you for a little bit until you start scoring again.
Yeah. I love Eklund. I one of my favorite Sharks prospects. That's my last thing. And putting him at, you know, number two, and as the, you know, projection of a second line player, feels like it's going to hurt a lot of opinion, or feels like I'm down on him.
I think it's what he is.
So you've already talked about your number one, Will Smith, just ahead of Eklund, and how that's kind of been the consensus among scouts for right now. And that's where I've got him slotted too, is after he got drafted, I think he kind of moved ahead of Eklund only for, you know, and some people might disagree, like you said, this is the ultimate ceiling. I think Will Smith, where he was drafted fourth overall, the year that he's had, and just his overall skill level, I think, matches more of a first line talent rather than possibly a second line talent. And that's kind of the biggest jump. There's still a lot of development that needs to happen with Will Smith. And I think he's going to the right place. He's going to go to Boston College and round out his game, like we've talked about a few times, to really match that number one center role. And that's what expectation is.
We're a BU podcast here. Okay?
Oh, we're a BU podcast?
We have to be, all right?
The Sharks. I am a fan of Providence College. Anyway.
RPI like for all... the win, baby. RPI.
I like all the Boston teams equally, okay? We've got a Harvard kid. We got a Boston College kid. We got a Northeastern, you know. Two kids, actually, Northeastern. I shouldn't say kids. Two players. But anyway, Will Smith, he's got to round out his game to really match that number one center role. And what I worry about is that a guy like Dylan Strome, and if you remember, Dylan Strome just finally broke in this year as like a 25-year-old with Washington after his like fifth team to really be what they consider a number one-ish center. in the NHL.
Still a limited player, yeah. But
yeah, but he put up like 60 something points, and it was like, all right, I'm okay enough to play in, you know, 18, 19 minutes a night kind of thing. And it took years. But Will, or, you know, Dylan Strome coming into his year put up like 130 points in the OHL and was considered like he's got the skills to be a number one center.
Sure.
He just didn't have the well-roundedness to his game to really be that player. And that's what I think that needs to happen with Will Smith is that, you know, if he doesn't, it turns into the situation where you're not really a number one center if you can't play 20 minutes a night in all situations kind of thing. And I'm really hoping that's what Will Smith turns into. It's just going to take some time.
Yeah.
That's not what he's shown so far.
Yeah. I mean, Strome. Yeah. You don't want Strome. So, I mean, Strome is still.
Strome is an offensive player. And that's
on a non-playoff team, I might add too. So,
yeah. So, but like, that's where I think the trap can be is that you see somebody with the offensive skills of like a Dylan Strome that never rounded out everything. Mm-hmm. And if that's what happens to Will Smith, I think that's what Will Smith becomes is more of a Dylan Strome player rather than like your, you know, top six center kind of thing. But I have a lot of faith in Will Smith. I think he's going to do very well in the NCAA next year. And it's going to be fun to watch. He's playing with Cutter Gauthier. He's going to go to play for the U20s or play in the U20s. And it's going to be a fun year for him. And it's also just a probably as a whole, before we get onto some honorable mentions, guys and guys who didn't get into, I was thinking about this. I don't think the Sharks have had a better top five prospect pool in 20 plus years. Like, I think it's been since.
That's a good, that's a good thing. I should dig into that. Yeah. So, I mean, like, I would.
97, 98, they drafted Brad Stewart, Patrick Marleau.
They drafted Stewart a couple of years later.
Stewart was 98. But,
Or 99? 98,
99. I think he. Either way, it's like what I meant, like.
If we're using sort of the same cutoff, though, I think it was, I don't know, it's one of those years. But anyway, if we're using the same, like, the cutoff I use is like 25 games. And so, let's say, like, when you drop Brad Stewart, I would not count Marleau as a prospect at that point.
Because
Marleau had already played a full season. But I think though maybe some that's actually really great. I actually will look into it. I think I'll write about this. I'm actually very curious what I come up with sort of there or what I learn. Before the 97-98 season, you know, we have Marleau, you have Hannon, you just drafted Sturm. Who was drafted a year before but made his NHL debut in 97-98. So he would have been sort of probably in the Sharks' top five. So that might be a competitive one. You bring up an interesting argument that this might be the strongest top five since then. But
yeah, you've had like guys that are, you know, every 5 or 6 years they hit with a prospect or a player.
Yeah.
Like Meyer, Couture, Hurdle, that kind of thing. But they never were this grouped, right? Like, well, not never, but
not recently. Yeah. Yeah. They just haven't been able to do that just because they've, you know, drafted so late and stuff. Right. So, I definitely look into it. Of course, we had to look into sort of like, we can't just say who turned out and who panned out and who didn't, because that's not the way to evaluate it, right? But sort of at the time, you know, because, you know, Sharks fans will remember names like Jeff Gilson. You know, I remember hearing all about how great a defenseman he was going to be. And he would have been.
Petrecki and Mirko Mueller.
Yeah, I don't know if Petrecki would have made it.
Petrecki he was the fell first rounder, right?
He fell late, though. He was, I think, I remember that draft year, people thought that he might be, he was one of those guys that was like preseason. Like was supposed to go higher, but then when we got to the draft, he fell. Mueller, right? Yeah, making an NHL debut as an 18-year-old. So that's actually a really interesting question. Yeah. So maybe next episode.
Yeah, we could do that next episode. Yeah, because you could go back through like, you know, the hockey news or whatever.
I have the Hockey News yearbooks. Yeah. So,
and can compare the offseason top five from those years to now.
So, yeah.
Be interesting. I think it might come out on top from a lot of teams or a lot of decades, probably, but just awesome for the Sharks. But all right. Who did we not mention that you want to give a talk about here on the podcast?
Yeah. These are the names that I looked harder into. I asked people about, of course, you know, when I asked people, you know, I give him my top 10. I give him sort of my honorable mentions or whatever, right? And of course, if they mention anybody else to me, then I'll take that into consideration. But no one really said anything. You know, I think this list is going to end up pretty thorough in terms of just how people are seeing the Shark system right now. So some of the guys on my list, Ohotiuk. And Ohotiuk, one scout told me that it's, you know, I think he likes the floor of Ohotiuk. You know, he's going to be a bottom pairing guy, but a very good one. And so a safe angel bet, you know, he's a guy that's right there. And so so one scout had him, would have had him. In a top 10, just for that, just for the sort of the floor, his security. Another guy I looked asked about was Tristan Robbins, and one scout said to me that Bordalo and Robbins were close to him, and he actually had this is the scout that's had Robbins, Gushin and Robbins ahead of Bordalo. And he said that you know, wanted to see Bordalo take more of a step than he did, but he recognizes that, you know, maybe he's being too reactionary, you know, a bad year. So again, I think the consensus is that Bordalo's talent is has more talent than Gushin and Robbins, but just again, people just aren't sure whether or not he's going to. You know, meet expectations. The other names on the list, I'm going to just kind of rattle off. I don't think that they made sort of the discussion of the top 12 or 13. Cagnoni, Cardwell, Furlong, LaRocque, Gurriev, and Makaniemi. So those are names I kind of dug into, but I don't think people necessarily see them as top 10 prospects. Oh, and one more name actually I wanted to mention. I did ask about because I was curious. Corey Promen had a list, a U23 under 23 mm-hmm. list, and he mentioned at 13 Rymaszewski, which I thought was really interesting. You know, that was he made his top 13, and Rymaszewski was a seventh round pick of this past draft. Usually not somebody that you see vaulted into top 13, especially of a Sharks prospect group that is a pretty decent one. You know, Promen had them 13th. So I was curious about more information about Rymaszewski. So I just wanted to add that one scout that I've seen who's seen him likes him. And yeah, good skills, good size, very smart. Mm-hmm. You know, can't compete with the pro yet, but has a huge upside. So I think that's maybe that's where Promen's coming from too. That, you know, even though he was a seventh round pick, and maybe he fell a bit because of the Russian stuff, maybe he would have gone higher in a different draft. The guy with some upside. So anyway, I just mentioned him. He was not close on my list, but somebody to keep an eye on.
And also not mentioned, I guess. Well, you mentioned it briefly, but was the reigning Sharks prospect of the year, Ethan Cardwell? I think out of those groups of players, you're looking for like one or two guys to make the NHL out of this like 13 to 25 range of the Sharks prospects, and that's the numbers game that that dealing with prospects is. It's a lot of them have. You know, everybody's got an upside. Everybody's got a ceiling and a potential to reach that ceiling, but not everybody does. And if you did, you're by far the best drafting team in the NHL with a bullet because every one of your draft picks hits, which never happens. So just something to keep in mind. I think a lot of these guys, I have a lot of opinions on them. And if you want to read them on the on my website, half-wallhockey.com, I got 30 plus prospects there, like we talked about, little blurbs about each one of them, including who you mentioned, Cagnoni, Robbins, Cardwell, Makaniemi, Furlong, LaRocque. I think someone's to keep an eye on. LaRocque, as he transitions from a post-injury season, is going to be kind of interesting. We talked about that with Todd Marchant on the podcast. How he comes back and gets up to speed is going to be really interesting because he does have some upside based on you know, statistical profile and the way that he plays. And he's a smart player as a defender overall. Robbins is interesting because he's like an example of good at a lot of stuff, but not great at like one anything. Mm-hmm. He's also not, you know, kind of the smaller size as well. So it's hard to project him because he's like average across the board.
Or below average in some places. Yeah. So his floor isn't as safe as, say, Hotiuk. So.
Yeah. So that's why somebody like Hotiuk, even though he's not going to project above average in mostly anything.
Right.
That he still has like that bottom pairing upside kind of thing.
He'll play and be mean.
He will play, be mean, and hit people. And that's also why they signed someone like Artem Guriev.
Sure.
At the OHL was to play, be big,
mean, and hit people.
Hit people. There's a lot of what I want to say about the Sharks prospects pool is it's improved a lot in 14 months since Greer took over, with the benefit of multiple picks and multiple trades. Mm-hmm. It's improved a lot. And it's also improved in the top end as well as all the way through the types of prospects. Because for a couple of years there, we only had Bordalos, Gushens, Robbins, Eklunds, which are all kind of a similar vibe of prospect,
sure.
Which we kind of knew was going to happen after 2020. But it, you know, it's improved in the type of prospects they have and also the top end of them as well. So very excited about this upcoming year, Shang. I think we will probably do throughout the year, maybe prospect check-ins or, you know, just some updates about how the prospects are doing over.
Yeah. That. Yeah. But, maybe at the post-trade deadline might be a good time to check in on the list, because obviously last year's list was transformed after the deadline, after the Sharks acquired, you know, Mook Medulin and Thrun. And just for fun here, I want to rattle off, I just pulled this up, the first San Jose Hockey Now top 10 prospects rankings. This is from October 2021, so 2 years ago. This is from actually when Nick I wasn't say rest in peace, but Nick is very much alive.
I'm sure he's doing fine.
That's why I delayed it. Yeah, Nick's doing great. I love you, Nick. that's from that iteration of the podcast. But anyway, the top 10 was, or my top 10 was, Jonathan Dahlin at number 10. Now in the SHL, Ben Gaudreau at number 9, now without an NHL contract. Number 8, Daniel Gushin, and he's held his spot or around there, even though even though the Sharks prospect list has gotten a lot deeper. Number 7 was Ryan Merkley, and I actually got some flack. I got pushback from people I was talking to. They're like, no, Merkley should be a top 5. So I was like, no, the guy can't play defense. And well, there you go. Number 6, Santeri Hodica, who went to New Jersey in the Meyer trade, was injured last year and is looking to kind of reclaim his career, but you know, not the highest ceiling guy, obviously. I think,
he's more kind like your Jake Furlong-ish or like somewhere around that level.
Or Hotiuk, this different style of play, though. Not the same kind of player. But, you know, Hodica probably ends up being, if he does work pan out, as a bottom pairing guy. I had Tristan Robbins, number 5. I think Tristan's done well, but. Like we mentioned, hasn't maybe excelled in a particular area that's going to, you know, make his NHL bones. Number 4, Artemi Kanyazev, who was traded for Leon Gavanka. And I don't know if Kanyazev is really going to pan out beyond, again, also a bottom pairing D. Number 3, Ozzie Weisblatt. And Weisblatt was much improved last season. In season, I was hearing by, you know, mid-season, late in the season, oh, here's a guy that is, wasn't even AHL caliber to start the season. Really wasn't. But he was able to turn things around and get himself to be a legitimate AHL disturber. And so hopefully he can make another leap.
Yeah, that's somebody that we actually didn't even mention in passing.
Right.
But Well, maybe once or twice we did, but you know, I think you're right. By the end of the year, he kind of took on his own role. He was playing more of a junior style offensive game, or trying to play that in the beginning, and it wasn't working at all. And then he started to get more pesty, more hitty, as Jason Demers talked about. And I think that's where his role is going to be, is that kind of pesty player.
Right. And, you know, I mean, you probably noticed that we didn't talk about also another guy that's, you know, maybe playing the junior game when he's at a different level of hockey. So it's not working, is a Brad Inco. So, yeah. Anyway, though, to round out the list, I had Bortolo at number two and Eklund at number one. And anyway, this is also an illustration of just how much turnover there is. Now, this is not a great Sharks prospects pool, not a deep one by any means. Definitely not as strong as this one, but look at just how much turnover there has been here, right? Like, there's only, of this top 10, there are only, let's see, I guess maybe four guys that you hope will have high. Well, actually, maybe not. Maybe just three guys, like Eklund, Bortolo, Gushin, high-end NHL careers. I don't know. Like, there's still hope for Hadika, Robbins, Kanyazev, and Weisblatt, but I'm not sure if people see them as, like, you know, potential top six or middle pairing or above defensemen. I don't know. Whereas, yeah, so three guys that have sort of survived this sort of a attrition. So anyway, that's just sort of an interesting look back. And so, yeah, our list is going to look really stupid by the trade deadline, actually. So, yeah.
Yeah, actually, very much so. And I think the bigger or a big tournament will also be the World Juniors in January and December, because we've got Will Smith and Bistad and Havlid all going to be playing there. Maybe Musty if he makes the team.
Sure.
Maybe Lund if he makes it, but we'll see. And it'll be interesting just by the trade deadline, who we add and all that. I'm very curious to find out. But I think it's time to get out of here. We've rambled on for a long time. But Chang, where can the people find you? Start with that one.
Well, the same place they can always find me at Chang _Pang and San Jose Hockey Now and NBC Sharks.
Perfect. I'm Keegan McNally. You can find me on halfwall_hockey on Twitter or half-wallhockey.com. I'm still working out the dashes and the underscores. One day we'll figure it out.
But yeah, go read Keegan's top as a top 20 and honorable mentions. So he talks about 30 prospects and with, you know, some good detailed blurbs about, you know, maybe the top 10, top 20, right? And yep. So yeah, check that out. It's good stuff.
Thanks, guys. I hope you all have a good week. We will see you next time.